Good afternoon. Welcome to Passionate Internet Voices Talk Radio, Inc., a league of nations among other internet radio talk stations, voices of the people, united we roar. Today is April 13th, 2007. PIVTR is the internet home for anyone seeking quality information and entertainment, as well as answers to many of the multiple concerns that the average person wants to know. At PIVTR, we not only provide experts passionate about their work, we offer you viable content and solutions. PIVTR is also dedicated to helping published, mid-list, and beginning writers, unknown authors, small businesses, and entrepreneurs to further market themselves, their services, books, and products to the media. Today, from 2:30 to 3 o'clock, the program with Dr. Barbara Becker hosting Happiness for Women Only is beginning now. Good afternoon, Barbara. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm so glad to be back. I'm Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein, positive psychologist and happiness coach. You can always find me 24/7 at enchantedself.com. That's one word, enchanted self. Let me tell you a little bit about my work. I've been in private practice as a psychologist for over 25 years, and I've conducted case study research on women of all ages. It's the results of this research that led to my initial formulation of the Enchanted Self. Actually, what I discovered in my research was that women have a great capacity for pleasure and happiness. However, this capacity is often thwarted by society at large and even by women ourselves. In the hustle and bustle of life, and sometimes due to all sorts of things, such as being criticized, put down, feeling diminished, feeling we have nothing to offer. Often women return to their capacity for happiness, what I call the enchanted self, in secret, when no one is looking. Sometimes they almost never return, and that is our loss as well as the loss of society at large. I decided my mission as a positive psychologist is to teach women the wisdom secrets of returning to our birthright of happiness on all the time, because it is our birthright. We deserve to be happy, thriving, and in tune with our own passionate natures. Each week we've been discussing some of the wisdom secrets for women, and I would suggest that you listen to my archive shows on Internet Voices Radio. Go back and listen, because each week you'll pick up even more and more information about the wisdom secrets for women. We deserve to be happy. Well, I thought it would be great fun today to work on the wisdom secrets through the eyes of a child and learn some more about our wisdom secrets from viewing how she sees her world and also how she triggers us to see our own predicaments and world. Now, she is the star of my new book, The Truth. I'm 10, I'm smart, and I know everything. She is quite a little girl, and you're going to get to hear some of her excerpts today. I was going to say experts, but actually, I have an expert on who's going to help me process her wisdom remarks, her insights. By the way, I want you to know, again, you can come to enchantedself.com to order my book, The Truth. You can get it hot off the press right before when it comes out. It's now gone into printing and should be available for me to send out to you within 3 or 4 weeks. So please come and order it on my site, Enchanted Self. Now, today I have my in-house resiliency expert, Dr. Sandra Prince-Embury. And let me just tell you a tiny bit about Sandra. There's a lot to say, but I'll just pick up on some of the important things. Dr. Prince Emery is currently the director of the Resiliency Center of Allenhurst. She's a clinical psychologist and marriage and family therapist. She's worked with women, families, teens, mothers, and daughters in therapy for 25-plus years. She's author of the Resiliency Scales for Children and Adolescents, 2005, and the Resiliency Scales for Adolescents, 2007, which just came out, all available through Harcourt Assessments Incorporated. Welcome, Sandy.
Hi, Barbara.
I'm so glad to have you as my resiliency expert. It makes me feel very resilient.
It's a pleasure to be here. And you are resilient.
Well, thank you. And I thought we could have a lot of fun today talking about resiliency triggered by the girl in my new book, The Truth. So I'd like to read an excerpt and then have you talk about resiliency as it is implied in the excerpt, okay?
Sounds good.
All right. So the little girl has gone through the fifth grade. We're now about in the middle of the book, and sixth grade is coming, but first is the long, long, empty summer. So here's what she says. And by the way, I do just have to say that she is in love with a little boy, and he'll be away. So that's going to make it even a more vacuous summer. Quote, I won't be seeing Paul over the summer. He mentioned that he's going away to camp. Maybe he'll miss me. I know I'll miss him terribly. I can't imagine him not being nearby. I am lonely already. How will I get through each day? I hate to go to the city camp. My parents make me, and I have to drag my brother. Yuck! They make us swim in that awful wide pool twice a week that smells of chlorine. And they try to teach us tennis. I hate tennis. I always miss the ball. And then they have the most boring arts and crafts. I do not want to make another wallet. What will I do with another wallet? I have five from last summer. End of quote. Okay, so here's this little girl with all this time, which can seem like an eternity when you're 10 or 11, and how does this tie into some of the notions that we teach parents and kids around resiliency?
Okay. I think that fits in very well to the notions of resiliency. And I think that it might be useful to recall the basic construct that I talk about in defining resilience. And the first one is a sense of mastery. The second is a sense of relatedness. And the third is emotional reactivity. I think as children approach the summer, it's a time that is unstructured for most children, or it may be structured in a way that's slightly different from the rest of the year. And how a child approaches the summer is individual to the child, but from the excerpt that you read, this little girl is seeing it as a time where there's going to be more distress in her life. And so for her, it's a disruption of many things. Now, she's focusing on the loss of contact with a boy that she's enamored with. That represents many children who lose during the summer the regularity of contact with peers and with friends. And that relates to the sense of relatedness as an important part of resiliency, that one of the things that keeps kids healthy and resilient is knowing that they have regular contact with their friends and there's social connectedness that's going to be there on a daily basis. And that's something that parents should be aware of as the summer approaches, that that children, some of whom are able to keep that going on their own, but some who are not quite as good at having networks of friends that they keep. So helping the child to maintain regular contacts with friends would be important for a parent to be aware of over the summer.
May I mention something and then we'll go back to this?
Sure.
For example, parents can simply start to ask their children around April or May what different friends are doing and kind of keep tabs. And if it turns out that they're beginning to see that four of your six daughters' best friends are all going away to overnight camp, and you have made a decision that that's beyond the family budget or for other reasons you don't want to send your daughter, that should begin to signal a bell to the parent that this little girl may have some separation anxiety and distress going on because she's going to be down to very few friends.
Right.
And so perhaps beginning to plan with her whatever it is, you know, transportation to make sure she can get back and forth to the friends that are around. That would depend.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
That's excellent. And the other point that this little girl was going to be sent to a camp that she didn't want to go to, that sort of illustrates probably parental attempt to set something up, but it's not the right thing. And that's why the collaborative effort that you talk about, and that is the parent talking with the little girl about what is it that you would like, because after all, it is the child's sense of relatedness, and that's something that has to come from the child and can't be imposed by the parent selecting a place to send the child.
And maybe if it's still, you know, you get big families or whatever, and there's a free camp in town, and the parents need the children monitored for 4, 5, 6 hours a day, you can't fight City Hall, but you can, as the parent, explain to the child some of the reasons why she must go and also still build in some treats. The treat may be as simple as you and she going out for breakfast on Saturday and then to the public library, but or for a swim together or something, but, you know, that you're taking into account about this camp situation.
Yes, and I think also the special part of this is the parent being sensitive to the relationship needs of the child and taking the time to talk and do some planning with the child. That alone is relating meaningfully with the child. And I think approaching the summer in that way is very important and helpful.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And
now another aspect of resiliency that can be affected for children over the summer is their sense of mastery. And that is during the year for many children going to school structures again their activities and provides them a place where they can experience being masterful at something, whether it's the academics, whether it's school-structured sports activities, or other kinds of after-school activities. It provides a way in which the child can experience sense of competency and self-efficacy. And then for many children, when school stops and the summer approaches, there's that lack of structure, and there isn't a place set up for the child to experience those feelings either. So that would be another thing that perhaps the parent would want to think about.
Right, and the parent may be assuming that arts and crafts is really sort of a place where the girl is feeling masterful, but if the parent really listened, making more wallets just isn't feeling like mastery. You know, and maybe there's something else, whether it is learning to row a boat when the family goes out to the local lake or something, that, you know, they were going to teach her, they were going to teach her, they never really got to teach her. You know, maybe this is a summer. And I'd like to bring one point about this, Sandy, Dr. Prinz-Emery, up to adults, because we're looking for wisdom secrets for women also.
Right.
I find that so often for us women, we don't have a way to document or feel our mastery either, because, you know, I was thinking as you were talking, when you go to school, it's sort of wonderful because every Friday, you know, you got that spelling test, and if you were pretty good in spelling, you got another, whatever, 85 or better on it, and you went home feeling masterful, even if it's just 12 new words that you knew. Now, as a grown-up woman, sometimes I could go half a year without feeling masterful. It's sort of like, you know, no one is there sort of putting me through my paces. There's a kind of malaise that can set in. For many of my clients, they've left behind so many of their interests and talents from years ago that there's no sense of achievement because they consider running their family and stuff sort of a given.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we could say that a wisdom principle out of this little vignette and your concepts of resiliency is that as women, we must build in a way that we continually become more and more skilled, whatever we pick or many things that we pick, you know, that we'll have to build it in ourselves.
I think that's a good point. I think that's a very good point because I think our society structures sense of mastery around activities that are wage-related or occupationally related, and certainly many women have wages and have occupations, but the traditional role structure did not define that as a primary female way of being competent and being masterful. And so you're right, women face more of a challenge in terms of feeling good about that part of their lives. And I think just sitting back and thinking about what you as a woman, what you feel good about, what you feel you do well, what your special talents are, and just writing that down and focusing on that, and then making sure that those things aren't neglected in your life, because you may be very talented at something, but if you don't do it on a regular basis, you don't get to necessarily feel good about it.
Well,
it doesn't necessarily nourish you.
Certainly. I mean, when I played the violin for 10 years, and when I pick it up now, I can tell you what the strings are. I mean, that's about it, you know. But I have a cute vignette that I think is very pertinent. I know this woman, when she had a job and she had three young grown kids and she had a husband she was, you know, happy with. But I didn't really feel she had anything special for herself. She loved to sing. And she did that in the car, you know, the shower, that kind of thing. Well, one day a friend suggested to her that they go to a week-long singing camp for grown-ups. And she and her girlfriend went, and it totally revitalized her entire psyche.
That's wonderful.
That's a perfect example. Yeah. They had concerts. Their husbands, who had been left behind, had to schlep up to hear the concert. They were the stars, you know. And they have gone now probably 12 years in a row, and once or twice, I think, even to Europe singing with one group or another. And so here's a real example where somebody helped herself to honor the wisdom principle of bringing back your own talents and doing something with them.
That's excellent. And I think it also points out that so often your original point that for women that the sense of mastery may not be built in to a woman's life, and that she really does have to sit down and focus on what are the things that I do well that I'm proud of, and are they active in my life? And if not, sometimes it takes that little extra effort to go out and find a place or an opportunity to exercise that part of yourself.
Right.
And that it does regenerate. Mm-hmm. It does bring back that extra energy and extra appreciation of oneself that constitutes resiliency and does generate over to other areas of your life.
Wow, that's so important. Speaking of friends, we have a very short vignette from The Girl, from my new book, The Truth. I'm 10, I'm smart, and I know everything. I think we could just read it and connect in for a couple of minutes. I know the truth about friends, too. Some people make you feel creepy, and they always make you feel bad. The truth is you shouldn't hang around them. Some people make you feel wonderful, like Dorothy makes me feel, and you should hang around her and people like that. If you don't have anyone good to hang around with, then maybe you have to hang around with yourself for a while. Okay.
That's wonderful. That is really spoken from a child's point of view and sort of the gut level sense that you have about people and about how comfortable you are with people around you and how you need to listen to that sense because it's important. And what that relates to in the resiliency construct is basically the sense of relatedness that's so central to whether a person is or and a child are resilient or not. And there are several aspects to one sense of relatedness, and it's sort of a complicated construct that has to do with trust, feeling that one is supported, feeling comfortable with others, and tolerance of others. And what this young girl seems to be relating to is just that basic comfort on one level, that gut-level comfort, but probably also sense of trust, that there's certain very subtle ways that kids can pick up whether someone is trustworthy, whether they're reliable or not, and they have to trust these feelings.
And as a parent, you can listen to your kid, and instead of saying things like, "Oh no, she's really nice," "Oh, don't worry, you'll get along," listen, because maybe that kid has picked up some aspect of her friend's character that just doesn't feel right, and she's trying to express it to her mom, who doesn't understand because she's not really listening. And also, she's trying to build some sort of matrix of how you decide who is good for you and who isn't good.
Excellent. That's an excellent point. And I think that as a parent, when situations like this occur, it's helpful to just have a little conversation about friends and friendship and what's entailed and what constitutes a good friend. And often, if a child is going through a lonely period where there isn't someone special or someone that's fun in his or her life, the parent can help the child think back to a time when there was. And to think about what that friend was like, what some of the activities were, and what was trustworthy, what was reliable, and to reinforce that basic good judgment that a child should develop in terms of what constitutes a good friend.
And maybe even by picking up on some of the things they did together, you know, for example, maybe tap dancing class or something. Maybe there is something that the parent can be generous and help the kid get into, which hopefully might lead to a new friend if that friend has moved away or something.
And then another part of that is the value of good friends, and that it may be that if a child is going through a period of loneliness or feeling separate from the kids at school, writing to or phoning a very good friend that had been there and perhaps has moved might be a good thing to do at that point in time.
Right, right. And if we take it up to the wisdom secrets for a grown-up woman, which are now in two parts, because one is how she'll handle a kid if she has a child in her life, and it may be a neighbor's child. We never know when it's going to be our responsibility to listen and say the right thing. But also for us women to look at what's going on in terms of friendship, because we know that women get more depressed when they're alone and isolated. We know that intellectually and through research, but women are often hesitant to, you know, pick up the phone and say hello to someone 3,000 miles away.
Yes, that's true. And when a person is feeling lonely and depressed, that's exactly the time that it's important to connect with others.
Yeah, and it's hard. It really is hard. So you have to kind of push yourself through that ether of, you know, that usually some mixed feelings and so on. But it can make a lot of difference. And in
it's been scientifically established that sense of relatedness is important, and that depression in part does stem from feeling cut off and withdrawing and not feeling that there are people there for you. So the antidote to that is to reconnect yourself or to connect with those who are really there, but for whatever reason you feel disconnected from.
Yes. Well, Dr. Sandra Prince Embry, as usual, you've added the spice of wisdom to our show. And I think we've just about run out of time, but this show, Happiness for Women Only, I think filled its purpose today in establishing some more of the wisdom secrets for women in terms of happiness. And we were able to connect them between a child's thought and her world and the concepts of resiliency, which are so vital for us to help ourselves and our children. So I want to thank you. And
you're welcome.
Thank you again. And everyone, you can find me, as I said, Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein, on enchantedself.com and this radio, wonderful radio station, the Passionate Internet Voices Talk Radio, which is at internetvoicesradio.com, and all the archives, so you don't have to lose any of the wisdom secrets. And again, Dr. Prince Embry, how can people reach you?
People can reach me at the Resiliency Institute of Allenhurst, and calling at 732-272-3773.
Great. Thank you so much. And until next week, goodbye for now.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much for listening to Passionate Internet Voices Talk Radio. You have just listened to Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein and Happiness for Women. And if you want to hear this all over again, please go to http://internetvoicesradio.com and click on Dr. Holstein's archive, and you will find it up there within an hour. If you want a transcript, please contact Deb Harris. Just click on Info Only, scroll down the page, and you will find the email there, and you can copy and paste it and ask how much it would cost you. PIVTR, whether providing you with the advice of experts or giving a voice to the average person who would not otherwise be heard. PIVTR emphasizes quality and enriching program for our listeners' enjoyment. Next program coming up is at 3:30 to 4 with Monica Coleman, Let's Talk Waterways, and then 7:30, Kimberly Maroney, One Soul Connections, because on her chosen night, Nothing was working right. We had storms here. So thank you all very much for listening. I hope you have a great day, and I hope you have a wonderful weekend, and we'll see you bright and early on Monday morning, starting the week all over again with Deborah Lynn's Hill and the proper care and feeding of your soul. Thank you very much for listening, and remember, keep listening.